Bob Patterson.
Check. Get the vocal mic up a little bit for me, please. Hi, folks. How you doing? What a wonderful festival, huh? Boy, this weather's all right. Places think that we know darkness. Darkness. I've been places so dark couldn't even see your hand in front of your eyes. Black. Black as a water moccasin's eye. But I'd like to tell you a little story that deals with a different kind of darkness. And unlike many stories you may hear up here, this one's the truth. You know, we have solid archaeological evidence that there were human beings living here in Florida more than 12,000 years ago. For thousands of years, these people lived in large numbers, passing on their culture from generation to generation with stories and songs. A group of people that occupied the southwest of coast of Florida was known as the Caloosahatchee. They built huge pyramids out of football-sized whelk shells. They built holding ponds for fish. They built long houses capable of housing 2,000 tribespeople. They built ceremonial altars facing the setting sun. Their priests wore these wooden, godlike masks. They practiced human sacrifice. And according to the earliest Spanish missionaries, their kings wore a curious gold medallion on their forehead. Now, the fact that the Caloosa lived here in such large numbers is pretty amazing, especially since there's no evidence of any kinds of agriculture. The fact that they actually thrived here is mind-boggling. In 1964, David Taylor, a 14-year-old boy, he was out digging for Indian artifacts. On that day, he came across some beads, some bones, and a curious gold medallion. The gold medallion was 64 millimeters by 33 millimeters, made of sheet gold, weighed less than an ounce. It had unusual etchings on it, large cross with bisecting lines, circles, teardrop shapes, open rectangles like a doorway within a doorway. And on the spatulated side, it had to be etchings which appeared to be like phases of the moon. These kinds of etchings have actually been seen in other places around the world, but nobody really knows what they mean. Young David felt badly that he had dug into an Indian's grave. He became very nervous. He was upset. He was obsessed with the thoughts of Indians. He began having nightmares. His mother began having nightmares. The last nightmare she had, her and David were standing in water up to their neck. David was holding on to the Caloosa medallion, and he drops it. She begs him not to go after it, but David disappears beneath the surface of the water. She never sees him again. 3 days after Lorraine Taylor had that nightmare, David Taylor hung himself from a tree. The whole community was shocked. Even the medical examiner, I guess out of respect for the family, didn't call it suicide. On David Taylor's death certificate, it reads, death by misadventure. Lorraine Taylor was, of course, emotionally crippled by the loss of her son. One day, she got an unusual phone call from an amateur Indian artifact dealer who suggested that she attend a seance with him. You know, that's where a group of people get together in a dimly lit room, in a circle, hold hands, and it is said through the powers of someone in the room that they can communicate with the dead. And indeed, they did contact David, and when they asked him if his mother should sell that medallion to the Indian artifact dealer, there were knocks on the table indicating that she should do that. And she did. She took a priceless Caloosa Indian medallion and sold it to this amateur Indian artifact dealer. Well, when some of the local folks in the community found out that she had succumbed to such trickery, they began to seek out the Indian artifact dealer. By the time they found him, he was already nervous. He was already upset and obsessed with the thoughts of Indians. He was having nightmares. He was glad to get rid of it. It was eventually sold to two archaeologists who had been lifelong friends. Their plans were to take the Caloosa medallion, place it in a museum with David Taylor's name next to it. And then they thought better of that, because they knew that that kind of public display of such treasure would only encourage more and more people to dig into ancient burial sites. So they began to argue about what to do with the medallion. They became nervous, obsessed with the thoughts of Indians. They were having nightmares. Their friendship was on the brink of disaster when it was sold to a person who wishes to remain unidentified. And I saw that medallion not long ago, held it right there in my hand in the same place where Calusa Kings had once worn it. It seemed to glow like it had absorbed 1,000 years of primal light, but those etchings seemed to suggest a darkness, the kind of darkness that's filled with wicked and evil things, the kind of darkness that makes islands take on the shape of dinosaurs at night. 25 miles from Fort Myers on Pine Island are the last known remains of Calusa bounds and ceremonial halls. It's under protection of the University of Florida's Museum of Natural History. What Machu Picchu is to the Inca, what Tikal is to the Maya, the Calusa is to Florida. It's our last chance of understanding what happened to a vanished people. It's our last chance of understanding the curse for the Calusa medallion. Can you tell me, where have they gone? Can you tell me why they're not here? For thousands of years, they lived in harmony with this land. Can you tell me, where have they gone? Alongside rivers as ancient as this world, their spirits walk with the wind. They left their souls behind, lost in the rapids of time. But can you tell me, where have they gone? Beside the ocean, alongside of the Gulf, next to springs and deep in the swamps, their spirits speak to me through the eyes of living things. Can you tell me, where have they gone? The Calusa, Miaka, the Tequesta, the Apalache, the Tocobaga, the Matacumbe, the Alachua, the Minnesota, and the Timucuan. Can you tell me, where have they gone? Can you tell me why they're not here? Can I have just a little less guitar in the monitor? I know it's an unusual request for someone like me. Amazing that all those groups of people that we had living here in Florida, after, you know, with all this genetic testing that they're doing, you know, after 250 years, there's not a trace of any of them. Ever since my friends Gamble Rogers and Will McLean were voted into the Florida Artist Hall of Fame, more and more people ask me all the time what it was like to ride around Florida more than 30 years ago with Gamble and Will. I'm always quick to tell them it was a whole lot of fun. It was real special. Gamble had an old Ford Mustang that, when it came off the showroom floor, it must have been a real pretty coral green, but this was a car that was rode hard and put up baked in the Florida sun, and that coral green had kind of faded to the color of a split pea soup. This car was rode so hard we get up 60 miles an hour just to get the headlights to come on. Gamble had congenital rheumatoid arthritis, and the front seats in that Mustang would just never do, so he yanked them out and installed these big leather seats from a Lincoln Continental, make it more comfortable. He'd come pick me up at my house behind the old sugar mill in St. Augustine. We'd drive down to the Tradewinds Tropical Saloon and pick up Will McLean. Will McLean would get in the back seat with the guitar and start singing songs and telling stories about Florida. Now, if Will had too much to drink and he couldn't play the guitar, we'd let him drive. Those were different times. Yeah. So we drive on down to Bunnell, hang a right turn on Highway 11, take that pretty road down through the woods. I remember one time we were going over Middle Hall Creek. I noticed a whole bunch of cattle grazing in the water line, but, well, what really got my attention was this bull. He was roaming around the pasture in a sporting manner, a manner to leave the most casual observer, if you were a man, to be a bit envious. I said, "Gamble, I wonder what it is they're feeding that bull." Gamble said he didn't know the name of it, but it kind of tasted like chocolate. Drive on down the Highway 40, hang a right turn, and head on over to Ocklawaha County. Head up old Red Bean Road, halfway between Bean Creek, Snipes Ford, until we see a little blush of neon coming through the pines, and we come across the Terminal Tavern. Hangar-like structure, surrounded with an acre and a half of pickup trucks. Chrome trailer hitches glittering in the starlight, some encapsulated with phosphorescent tennis balls. Had a little hitching post out front for the old boys who still rode horses. It was a kind of a bar, I call it a two-beer bar, you know, one to drink, one to throw. Gamble called it a skull orchard, the kind of place where they checked you at the door to see if you had a gun or knife. You didn't have one, they gave you one. We go inside and hang out with all the good old boys there, old Agamemnon, Jones, Still Bill, Downwind, Dave, Sheriff, Hutto, Proudfoot, and you know, there's a lot of young fellows there too, the Arendelle boys, and you know, what is it about young people that they gotta always play tricks on the old guys, huh? Well, just a few days earlier, Downwind Dave was in there having a bowl of his favorite chili, and when he wasn't looking, those Arendelle boys mixed in a little birdshot with it. The next day, Dave was out raking his lawn, and he bent over to tie his shoe and shot his dog. I wasn't hurt that bad. It was just an air gun. And old Agamemnon Jones, he was in there one night. He was getting all liquored up. And the Arendelle boys went outside and turned the saddle around on his horse. Well, you should have heard him. He was riding all over Ocklawaha County telling everybody the Arendelle boys would cut his horse's head off. Aunt Martha asked him how he got home. He said he had to steer that horse by sticking his thumb in the horse's windpipe. So there I am upstage one night at the Terminal Tavern behind the chicken wire, and I'm singing this real pretty love song, and all the good old boys and good old girls are sliding back and forth the terrazzo floor that kind of looked like a bunch of blue crabs in a cardboard box from where I was. Well, I was right in the middle of this real pretty love song. Everything was pretty cool, and I could see out of the corner of my eyes. Here come the Terminal Tavern's bouncer, Chester the Molester. 350 pounds, 6'3", an IQ 3 points higher than bean dip. Had tattoos all over him, one arm, death before dishonor. My daddy was a truck driver. On his chest he had tattooed, "Let them that don't want none have memories of not getting any." He said, "Hot damn, boy, we don't want to hear any more of that belly rubbing music. We want to hear dueling banjos." I said, "Well, Chester, don't have a banjo. Sorry, I can't do that." And he said, "Son, you don't think you heard me? Want to hear dueling banjos?" And everybody in the crowd hollering, "Yeah!" And I looked for the doorway and tried to calculate to see if I could make it out in time. And when I realized that I couldn't, I had an epiphany. And is that sometimes necessity is the mother of invention. Chester looked at me and said, all picket white trash. Thank you so much. There was a time when we lived in the country all alone. Woods and meadows was all that I'd ever known. And I recall how the home place, it glittered in the sun. How it slept in the stillness of the night. Now times have changed, that old country home I dearly loved. The dirt footpaths have been turned into stone. And right where my dear old papa, oh how he rocked me on his knee. They're gonna build Highway 73. They're tearing down the old smokehouse. They're clearing out the trees. Plugging up the well. They're draining the pond. And right where my dear old mama birthed my little sister, Betty Lynn. Should I lie content to watch the swift and dreadful change? Close my eyes and pretend not to know. And will my voice fade in your ears at the end of my song? Can you accept the coming of the rose? Oh, I recall how the home place had danced in autumn's leaves. How it disappeared in the drift of the snow. The very things that warmed and enchanted my very soul have been lost since the coming of that road. Thank you.
Now, Bob has one of the best festivals here in the northern half of Florida. He's over called the Gamble Rogers Festival, and I want to make sure you all know about that. It just happened. It was the first weekend in May, so if you find yourself getting wanting to get...